Good afternoon, my brothers and sisters. How are you today? Good. After you. If I could play guitar better, I'd have went first. The ushers are going to come forward. If you came to came prepared to partner financially with what God is doing in and through us, finances is one way that that happens. If you came prepared to do that, that's what the bag going by is about. While they're doing that, we're going to jump right in to week 7 of a series called Decalogue. Deca, 10, log, words. I mean, 10 words that we came to call the Decalogue 10 Commandments, but it's actually the 10 words. It's a summary statement about the law, the covenant agreement that God made with the people of Israel through Abraham and then renewed once they were out of Egypt. Once they were out, he's like, let's re-up this thing. And he gives it to Moses. And so the 10 represent the entirety of the 613 do's and don'ts and all that's going on in the first 5 books of our Bibles. But Paul says, it's not just a law. It's not just do's and don'ts. He says the law is spiritual. And as Stephen led us through up to this point today, we're going to be talking about number 7. Now it's interesting, 7 in the Hebrew language, in the scripture, 7 is oftentimes used as a way to symbolize wholeness and integrity and fidelity. It's used to describe one's intended relationship to God. And so 7 oftentimes is the number used when that wholeness or that connection with God is seen to be or experienced to be broken. Then there are 7 things or 7 steps to get your mind reoriented back. So 7 so often has to do with wholeness or completion or integrity of relationship. And so the 7th command, Exodus chapter 20, verse 14, you shall not commit adultery. It's going to be a fun day. Nice light subject. We were going to do this for Christmas, but we just got too excited. Do it today. You shall not commit adultery. Why do we do sermons on stuff like this? Like, well, we're only halfway through our hour. I guess we've got some talking to do, but you shall not commit adultery. Why do we need a sermon about that? I mean, that's pretty straightforward. And some of you are like, well, wait. Let's reference the original language. What is this in Hebrew? Oh, okay. Here's how it literally renders. You will not commit adultery. No. What I'm saying is the word adultery, like it's probably kind of a complex word. What's the root word behind it? Okay, fine. Na'af. Is that helpful? Because it means adultery. And then the rest of the sentence is a you won't kind of connotation to it. Why do we do sermons on this? Why do we need this explained? Why? And look, we love context. I'm not one of those that says, oh, just whatever it says, do it. Jesus says, poke your eyes out if you lust. I've lusted. I have both my eyes. He hopefully means something deeper than that. So we understand context is king when you're trying to interpret the scriptures and to understand them. But this is really plain. Don't cheat on your spouse. Now, some of you, you're already starting to nod off because you're like, oh, adultery. Well, I'm not in an exclusive relationship. I'm not married. Maybe I don't have any intentions of doing that ever or anytime soon. This applies to all of us. And yes, pastors say that to keep everybody engaged sometimes. I really believe this with conviction. This is about something else today. Why do we need a sermon on this? Why would we say, well, okay, so let's spend some time and figure out what this means. See, there's something really significant. And at the risk of being dramatic, let me tell you why I think this is so, so important. Because every one of you have seen this phrase, and some, maybe the King James Version or something, every one of you have seen this phrase before. You've heard, at least heard it before. But here's something very, very significant to consider. So again, at risk of over-dramatizing this whole thing, I'm visual, all right? Everybody from the palm of my hand over this side of the room, will you please stand up? Ma'am, I cut you right in half. Sorry about that. Yeah, okay. Up, yes, you, and you in the back, Baldy, down. Got it. It's Stephen. We have it like that. I do this by choice, though. There's tension in the room all of a sudden. All right, so. That's, Jonathan's doing that one. That's weeks from now. This is exactly 41% of the room. I cannot find a statistic that I trust that has a percentage less than 41% of married people who have cheated, who confessed to adultery. I found numbers higher, didn't necessarily trust those. I couldn't find any that said something lower than 41%. And understand, this is a highly secretive issue, so these are people who admitted it. I couldn't find a number of less than 41%. Of course, I'm guessing here, but 41% of people in a relationship that admitted, yeah, there at least once in our relationship, I committed adultery. Everybody's seen that. Why are we doing a sermon on it? Isn't that wild? It's a lot of people. Now, some of you instantly have insecurity. 41%, that's almost half. That's one out of every two people. Oh my gosh, in my relationship, that means one of us. It's all of us. Take a class on statistics. That's not exactly how that works. But nonetheless, it's a staggering number of people that have admitted it. Have a seat. You shall not commit adultery. So some of us are like, we'll take this and if we could explain it, if we could explain what the consequences are, if really get people to understand that you, when you do this, you're hurting this and you're breaking down this and you're doing, if you could really help people, really explain the consequences, then people will appreciate it better. I've preached that sermon. You've heard that sermon before. Because if you give me an explanation that validates it, then I'll accept it. I don't take anything at face value. But if you explain that there's some consequences, then maybe I'll put my trust in it. We got this double door freezer fridge thing from Starbucks. It's got a little leftover sticker at the top of it. It says this right here. Don't stack items on top of the unit. What's that mean? Yeah, it means don't stack stuff on top of the unit. Then there's the smaller print. Airflow will be blocked. Airflow will be, those four words would not have been on that sticker 2-3 decades ago. But our culture has changed, hasn't it? Do not stack things on top of this unit. You're not the boss of me. I'll stack things wherever I want to. In fact, now I'm gonna and I wasn't. And so then the next line, no, let me explain it to you. You'll break it. I saw, please don't sit on this bench on a sign. It was wet paint and it said, please. Like I have to be persuaded not to ruin my jacket. Please. And thank you. Don't do this. Why? Well, here's why. See, our culture, if you can't explain it to me, then I'm exempt. Tobacco products began many years ago to have a warning on them. And those warnings have evolved. Now, frankly, tobacco products, this is a paraphrase, but tobacco products say this on them. I'm going to kill you. Not might, maybe. Put this in your mouth. I'm going to kill you. Either slowly or quickly, I'm coming after you. And people continue to light. Here's the thing about this warning. It comes with pictures. I mean, we went to health class. We've seen the jaws falling off. We've seen the emphysema lung. We've seen all that. There are no statistics that show that smoking has decreased since we've started putting these heinous warnings on the sides of tobacco products. There are statistics that show that tobacco use is on the increase. Because now that it's super dangerous, young people or young-minded people go, ooh, now it's got an edge to it. See, explanations, they don't do what we hoped, do they? In fact, they have the opposite effect. And here's one of the reasons I think why. I think explanations, when you give somebody an explanation of the consequence, it makes, because we're smart. We're really smart. You guys are really smart people. It makes us super creative. Do not stack things on top of this unit. You're not the boss of me. Why? Because it'll break it. You'll block airflow. Oh, so the issue isn't the stuff. It's make sure you don't block the airflow. so I can still stack this stuff on it, right? See, what we get really creative and we just figure out how to manage consequences. I can still participate in the prohibited behavior as long as I'm creative and smart enough to get around the consequences. You will not commit adultery. And many of us put an asterisk right next to it. Yeah, there's times where I'm just gonna. Almost half of us have said that. So Jesus does something. Because the law is spiritual. Paul says, look, any organized thought, any group of people can come up with a list of do's and don'ts. That's the law, Torah, the covenant, the first five books of Moses, all those do's and don'ts. There's something running in the background. He says the law is spiritual. It's spiritually appraised. There's something deep and transcendent going on. So Jesus knows the law is spiritual. So he's talking to a bunch of religious people. And he says, you've heard it said, don't murder. And all the religious leaders are like, yep, we've never murdered. See how beautiful, how wonderful we are? He says, yeah, but if you've got hate and anger in your heart, you're guilty of murder. No, Jesus, you don't understand. We've never produced a corpse. Right, but you still have murder inside of you. You have heard it said, you will not commit adultery. Yep, we have never cheated on our spouses. See how good we are? Jesus says, no. If you look at a member of the opposite sex, if you look with the intention to lust. Notice he doesn't say you're not allowed to be attracted. When you grow up in Jesus and you become spiritual, everybody becomes ugly. That's not how that works. Which would be helpful. Jesus says, with the intention, when you look lustfully, when you're with the intention to lust, you're still consuming her. You're still consuming him. You've turned him or her into body parts, into a product for your pleasure. Now all you need is an opportunity. It's already in you. But see, what Jesus isn't doing is making sure everybody feels guilty. His kingship isn't based on us just falling down, just feeling terrible about ourselves. It's a gift. He's saying, God is not interested in behavior management. The law is spiritual. You can't put a checkbox next to this just because you've never had the opportunity. The law is spiritual. This begins inside of you. I can't stand up here and make this any clearer to you. I can't. But what I can do, regardless of your being married or not married or your intentions to do, I think we can get at something that goes way, it runs far, far deeper. Far deeper than behavior management. So there's a great story from the book of Genesis. If you've got a Bible with you, open to the first book of the Bible. So you open it, it'll say index, there'll be a copyright. Keep going. Genesis 39th chapter. Genesis 39, it reads this way. Verse 1. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, he was the captain of the guard, bought Joseph from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. So Potiphar now owns Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes, of course. Like, man, this kid, everything he does is just great. And he became his attendant. He keeps giving him promotion after promotion after promotion. And Potiphar put him in charge of his household. And he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. This is getting better and better. He keeps handing responsibilities to Joseph. Man, thanks. So it takes pressure off of me. You're taking this pressure off of me. This is going well. Run it, manage it. You're doing great, Joseph. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, Potiphar did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. With all this freedom, I can now get to my obsession. Potiphar has a little problem. You clear his calendar, what's he going to do? Now I don't have to think about anything but food. Very interesting. Now, next verse 7. Joseph was well-built and handsome. In the Hebrew, you're supposed to actually drop your voice a little bit. Well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, now, I recognize there are some very, very younger people. This will be some interesting discussions for you. We'll do the best we can here, all right? It's in the Bible. Your issue is with God, not me. Took notice of this handsome, well-built Joseph and said, that. But he refused. He says, with me in charge, my master doesn't concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. He's not being cocky. He's just saying, this is an incredible responsibility. Do you know what's on my shoulders? My master has withheld nothing from me except you, ma'am, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against who? It's like Psalm 51. Against you and you alone I have sinned, says David after that moment. This is a fascinating perspective because in Egypt, you can find outside the Bible in Egyptian history, there's a whole code of conduct where adultery is concerned and you don't do it. But it really had to do with the man owning his wife, like property. But you never involve the deities. They don't really care about that stuff. They care about war and planets and stars, but they don't care about that. But it was still on the books. You don't do it. Another Mediterranean cultures in the Fertile Crescent, you found that there were adultery laws, but unique to the people of God is God involving himself saying, I absolutely care about that. I'm absolutely desiring to be involved in that. He says, how could I do such a thing and sin against God? This isn't just going to break down your family or embarrass or fracture. This tears something about the fabric of the universe apart. This is an offense to reality himself. Why would I do that? Next. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to, you know, or even be with her. He doesn't even want to be around her. Like, oh my gosh, this woman is obsessed. Like her opening line, are you kidding me? This is all she says. This is all this woman thinks about. He doesn't even want to be around her. Because he's smart. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by his cloak and said really the only thing that she apparently knows how to say. And so she's got a hold of his cloak. This is going to happen now. And he backs off. And he left his cloak in her hand, and he runs out of the house. In the New Testament, you find in sexuality is the only sin you're told to run from. Everything else, nope, you stand up to it, see it for what it is. With sexuality, it's you get out of there. Do not trust where your head's at. Go find another spot and think. She's holding his cloak. And when she saw that he'd left his cloak in her hand, and frankly, left her, and run out of the house, she called her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed, virtuous woman that I am. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Now, there's all kinds. This gets worse for Joseph. She's willing to have him killed, but Potiphar gets angry and throws him in jail. But this kid, man, everything he touches turns to gold. They throw him in jail. In a couple of years, he's running the jail. The jail guy's like, just run with it, man. So they get tattoos together. It works out really, really well. Everything this kid gets involved with, he flourishes. So he's fine, but she's willing to kill him. He gets thrown in jail. He's in jail for this, for years. There are some circumstances known to create the conditions for adultery that we can glean from this, but you can glean from your own experiences, your friends' experiences, listening to anecdotes, listen to other people's stories, on and on and on. There are some baseline common sense things that you and I all know about creating the conditions, the ripe conditions for adultery. These things do not cause adultery. They simply build a platform upon which adultery is easily built. It goes like this. Being close or interdependent on someone other than your spouse or the one that you have committed to. Continuing to be close and working in very close conjunction with somebody that's not your spouse. Again, that's, oh, wow. I know. It's common sense. We all know this. Here's another one. Being consistently around somebody who is known to be physically interested in you. That's kind of nice to find out that you're attractive to somebody. And then you keep working with them, knowing that they are physically drawn to you. Recipe for disaster. We see it over and over and over and over. Spending a lot of time one-on-one with someone not married to you. Oh, I always wondered about that. Yeah, so duh, yeah. That one's pretty simple, yeah? Seeking a sympathetic ear from the non-spouse about a sense of disconnection to your spouse. Like feeling lonely, your needs not being met, being upset or angry with your spouse. Man, she just never, she's always saying, he's not the man I married. And the other person is sitting there listening intently. You deserve so much better. And you say back, you always understand. You get me. Oh my gosh. The recipe for disaster. Common sense. Oh yeah, yeah. What a terrible scenario. Terrible scenario to find yourself in. Situations that create the sense of opportunity. The feeling that nobody's going to get caught. You're meeting somebody in private. Nobody knows it's just you two having a rendezvous, a meeting. And so it started off completely benign, right? It was just a business meeting or an out-of-town trip. Look, I don't want people walking out of here feeling anxious. But the statistics on out-of-town trips, if you don't have the communication and the, hey, here's the steps we take to protect ourselves from this. It's out of this world, how often this happens. So I don't want people, oh, geez, you know, every time he takes a trip, she takes a trip, I'm supposed to worry. No, but if you don't talk about it, if you don't have the things in place, this is a huge one. How many movies are built on this premise? Being away, being away, being away, but the whole time you're with someone that you're not married to. This last one, you can tack on to anything you regret. Situations involving intoxication. So intoxication doesn't just make bad ideas good. It just kind of levels them out to ideas. Hey, I know. This one, you can just tack onto any list right there at the end. Well, we know that. We absolutely know that. We know all of these. This couldn't be more common sense. And you could come up with some others, but they'd probably plug into the ones that are already up here. We already know this. We've known this for thousands of years. It's common sense. So some cultures, including this one, not anymore, but it used to be even in this culture, but in cultures around the world throughout time, they look at this list in their own way, their own version of this list, and they regulate interactions between the genders based on it. There are things you can and cannot do based on this. Jesus in John 4 is talking to the woman by the well. She's a Samaritan woman. His disciples come back and they go, you're talking to a Samaritan? We're Jews. We don't do that. A woman? Jesus, did you look her in the eye? Like Jonathan was talking about last week, Jesus has got perfect character. There's nothing he had to worry about. But, oh my, they were incensed. You're talking to a woman? You don't do that unless you're married to her or she's in your family. Why? Because of this. They regulate it. It's still regulated around the world. You don't do that. Now, here's the thing. When you regulate this, it doesn't change anybody's heart. It just controls their behavior. You take away the governance. You take away the regulation. Free for all. Because we're just managing behavior. Nobody's heart got changed. So in the West, what we've done is said, no, it's really about individual responsibility. You got to take responsibility for yourself. You are accountable. There's something strong in that. We believe that. We're going to give you freedom. There'll be some parameters to make sure people don't harm themselves, or at least not too bad. But you have the freedom to live your life. And if you mess it up, you are accountable. And that's why North Carolina is one of only about five or seven states left in the union where adultery is still a criminal act. You can in court collect a lot of money. I mean, millions of dollars in just the last 10 years gotten from the person that has cheated with the spouse. But for the most part, Western society has said, no, it's up to you. Personal accountability. Now, where that leaves us is willpower. You've got to do this. You are responsible. And so it leaves us with willpower. But the funny thing about willpower, how are your New Year's resolutions going? Pretty good. Terribly ineffective, are they not? I mean that with respect. I had a few that I left on January 3rd. Terribly ineffective. But it seems strong, you know? Try harder, daggone it. Try, be strong. But they're terribly ineffective. When you're young, willpower seems strong. You get older, willpower is stupid. Is there even a such thing? It's terribly ineffective. And so on both sides of how you're going to manage this common sense, you have failure. And so for me to stand up here and say, adultery is bad. Yeah, we know. Let me explain why. We know. It says right on the pack, death imminent. I'm still doing it. There's something else going on in a third space that's hard, but it's beautiful. Ephesians chapter 4, Paul says this to some young Christians. I say and testify in the Lord, you mustn't walk any longer like Gentiles do. This isn't literally a walk, is the way you live your life, live out your faith. And Gentiles means people who are just completely turned off to the way of Jesus. They don't know anything about him. They don't have a Bible. They're completely over here doing things their own way. We just kind of go with our gut. We're moral, but moral just means this is what everybody says is okay. That's a Gentile. Paul says, no, we can't walk like the Gentiles do any longer in the futility of their minds, the foolishness of their thinking. I want you to hang on to that. The futility of their thinking. They're darkened in their understanding. Their wisdom is barely firing. They're alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them. Listen, he's not saying they're naughty. They're bad. He says they're stupid. That's what he's saying. We can't do life like them anymore. Look at their lives. Look at the outcome. They're stupid. They're not bad. They're not evil. They're stupid. Due to the hardness of heart, they've lost their sensitivity to beautiful things. No, we're just kind of the walking sum total of our appetites. They've become callous. They've given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. That's not the way you learned Messiah, Christ, assuming that you have heard about him and you've been taught in him, as the truth is in Jesus, to put off your old self. That's why you're here. If even just a cell in you got you here, it's that one cell saying, hey, is there a better way? Our track record's nothing I would want presented on the screen. Is there a better way to do life, relationships? Is there a better way? Yes. That's what we're all trying to do, is put off the old self. That's why we read these books and watch shows. What do I do? It says in Christ, you learn Christ. That's how we put off our old self, which belongs to a former manner of life and is corrupt through what? Deceitful desires, not just desires, but the ones that lie. You need this. You don't. You'll believe that you do, but you don't. And to be renewed in the spirit of your what? See, this isn't about good boy, bad boy. Good girl, bad girl. It's about what goes on in here. It's what what you call your heart, your mind, your thinking. That's where God wants to get to. You will not commit adultery. Unless you do. It's behavior management. Anybody can do that. The law is spiritual. Jesus is trying to turn on lights where you and I have just resolved to live in darkness. In ignorance. To live stupidly. So we can look back on our life and not call ourselves immoral. We never do that. We say, man, I was stupid. Man, that was dumb. Can't believe I did that. The light, the illumination of wisdom that's available in Christ. That's what God wants. So there are steps to take to avoid adultery. But who wants to run from things their whole life and call it a marriage or a relationship? Here's all the stuff I do so that nobody cheats on me and I don't cheat on anybody. But so there are steps to take. But then there's a life to run to. That's beautiful. It has depth and it's not easy and it's countercultural, but it's beautiful. I want you to think about how quickly Potiphar's wife got angry. Why? Why'd she get angry so fast? I want you to come with me. Let's go. Boom. Let's get you killed. I want you in jail now. How does that happen so fast? How does she flip so fast? I'll tell you why. It wasn't about Joseph. It's about her. She didn't love him. My husband, all he cares about is food. What about me? You kind of feel bad for her a little bit. And she looks and says, Joseph, you're attractive. You be the drug. And Joseph says, I'm not interested. I'm not doing that. And she feels rejected again. There's an unmet need she's entitled herself to. And so, of course, it flips and becomes rage. It becomes ugly because it's not about love and it's not about Joseph. It was about her and her unmet needs. She probably would have justified it. She would have used words like love, but it was about her needs being met. Listen, this thing that we're calling love, this thing that many of us have decided we'll throw away all this beauty for in the name of, I couldn't help it, I just fell in love. It's not love. Our society has glamorized it, romanticized it, canonized it, but it is not love. And I mean this with respect, but it's an absolute childishness, and it comes down to this. It's a desire to be desired. What we call love, 99.99% of the time is a desire to be desired, a want to be wanted. I want you to admire me, to applaud me, to affirm me, to accept me. And when you do, it's like pushing a button. When you say these things to me, it gives me this thrill that I have confused with contentment and happiness and serenity and peace. It gives me this thrill because it feels good to be admired. Your attention, your being with me, it feels good. And so I'm nothing more than a robot. I'm allowing you to push this button. See, I used to be in sales. Some of you, maybe you train this. When I was a teenager, I would go into people's houses and leave 2 hours later with a lot of their money, and they kept my vacuum cleaner. I did that. That's hard to believe. This is how they trained you to do it. You go in and say, hey, that's a nice family picture you got there. Ooh, gun rack. I like that. I saw the truck in the driveway. And the guy's going, hey, this guy's great. He was a stranger, but he's like family. An hour and a half, I'm leaving with your money. I don't love you. I love me. There's an exchange, but I'm able to say things and do an interaction that makes everybody feel real warm and fuzzy on the inside. It's not love. It's business. I'm going to do this thing, and then you are going to make me feel this thing that I call love, but it's not love at all. We romanticize, we canonize. In fact, there's a hymn in our society for this. You'll know it right away. I want to invite you to sing along.
I want you to want me.
Come on.
I need you to need me.
See, take it.
I'd love.
Glory be.
And I'm begging you to beg me.
What? Then he says, I will shine my shoes and get home early from work if you will love me. That's not love. That's business. Then.
Didn't I see you crying?
Come on.
Didn't I see you crying?
Then says, see you all alone without a friend. You know you're dying.
Didn't I see.
What in the world is he talking about? What's he doing? He says, look, you're upset. Don't you feel alone? Let me be the salve for that because I want you to want me. I want you to want me. I desire that you would desire me. What's the name of that band? Cheap Trick. It's not love. This thing that we call love is a childish exchange of thrills. It's anxiety. It's an anxiousness. Can I get you to want to be with me? That's what we're asking. Well, you don't seem to want to be with me. And so this person seems to want to be with me. That's what you thought early on in this relationship. When the novelty wore off, now you believe it's going to last here. They never did. We know. I won't even share with you the statistics. They don't work. It's not love. Love is something that you give. It is not something you position yourself into being worthy of receiving. I know that's hard. Love is given, not finagled out of somebody. Wanting to be wanted, desiring to be desired, is not love. It's childish. And if you'll bring that out into the light of God, you'll understand that this isn't a bad boy, bad girl issue. It's foolish, childish desires. Deceitful, lying desires. That's what it is. So here's the 101. Avoiding adultery. You should at least have this in your life. And the brevity of this is not a statement about the importance of these things, all right? We're going to fly through this, take down whatever you want to take down, burn into your brain, whatever you want. This is 101. You've got to embrace integrity. Pay attention to your integrity. We try really hard on staff. We get made fun of all the time. Well, that might work for a pastor, but in the real world. Yeah, because I don't live in the real world. I don't do any one-on-one time with women that I'm not related to. If somebody meets with me, there'll be a third person in the room. I'm never meeting you for lunch. I'm never going to drive around in the car with you unless you're about dead. And I'll be on the phone with my wife the whole time if that happens. Call a paramedic. We'll get to the... I'm not going to do it. Is that because I don't trust you? Is it because I'm cynical? No, it's because I love my wife. I love my family and I love you. Well, in our world, it's not realistic. Then move to another world. If you're going to take this, if this is something serious, you have the power to make some changes. Well, that'll be hard. Well, welcome to the kingdom. Got to take these integrity issues quickly. There's a recipe for disaster that that's not realistic. 41%. We got to live a different way. Here's some more 101. Stop getting friendly with the opposite sex. You know it's different than with same sex, with people that you're not attracted to. But if you act differently to people that you're attracted to, name that. Put that in the light and say, I know what that is. Pay attention to how your spouse interprets love. If you walk into a room where nobody speaks English, yelling the phrase a second time, they still don't speak English. Demanding that the other receive love your way, that's stubborn. That's you at an altar, you swore to love and to cherish, not to do the best I can as long as you get it, but I'm not changing. No. It's to figure out, how does this person receive love? I'll lift his needs above mine. That's what I'm committing to do. I'm God's chosen minister for you. How do I love you? No expectation of return. It's going to be nice if it gets returned, but that's not a demand. That's different. That's 101. Here's some 201. It's a little harder. Some of us are in these relationships right now, statistically. God didn't tell me that. Statistics told me that. Some of us are caught up in this stuff right now. We skipped right over 101, and we are in emotional or even physical relationships with people that we shouldn't be. You've got to bring this out into the light. You might be a teenager that's not yet married, but you just know you are caught up in something you're not supposed to be, or you could be a married person that for years this has been going on, emotionally, physically, both. You have to name it. You have to bring it out in the light, and you have to tell somebody. And the issue so often is that because of a sense of rejection of an unmet need, you've given it to another person. So to admit this is to put yourself right in the arena of rejection. I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you want to actually overtly reject me. I know that it's hard. You got to drag it out into the light. They'll be squinting. It hurts your eyes. Seeing it for what it is. This is what we're invited into. It's painful. It may break other things. But if you're serious about this, if you actually want to shed the old self and step into the light of God, you've got to tell somebody. It's hard to do, but you got to tell somebody. You also have to stop excusing pornography just because it's two dimensions. They can't be real people, right? It's a magazine. It's a video. No, they're real people. Yeah, but they don't look like it bothers them. They're acting. And so are you. You gotta stop excusing it. You stop saying, well, there's nothing wrong with it. Well, then why do you do it in secret? How much longer do you want to live a bifurcated life where a whole half of you is shame? You gotta bring that out in the light. You gotta tell somebody. You gotta do the work. I'm gonna say you gotta tell a pastor. I'm so ashamed of this, but I am going to admit this. I am using people. I am becoming less than human in the process. I need to drag this out of the shadows. You need to end any and all relationships that you have. And when you crop a dog's tail, you do it all the way up to the point that you're going to crop the tail. And you cut it. And there's a yelp, there's a whimper, and it's over. But if out of timidity and compassion, you do an inch at a time, you're doing harm. You're not helping anything. End it now. You can blame your pastor. He said I had to. If that makes you feel better, great. Give him my number. I'll walk them all the way through it. But it's going to hurt, absolutely. But they might not understand. I don't care. You should not care. Collateral damage. You've got to just end it. And the only way to successfully get all the way through, and I've seen it successful, to salvage your relationship to your spouse, the only way that you do that is to absolutely cut it off. Throw your phone away, change your numbers, change everything. It's over, never again. No looking back. That's the way it's successful. To taper off, doesn't work. This is hard. This is a whole sermon, but I want to say it because you're in here too. There is a way of being the victim of this and being a loving victim. I'm not telling you should love it. I'm telling you should feel good. There's a way of being a loving victim through this. If you feel yourself giving into rage, revenge, ugliness for ugliness, evil for evil, vengeance, a vengeful heart, you veered off the tracks. I'm not saying that makes you a bad person, but there's a way to get all the way through this crazy time lovingly. It's going to take support. It's going to take others. It's going to take keeping it all in the light. There's a way to do it. That's 201. The next thing isn't even 301. This is so deep and it's so beautiful, but it's so simple. And it's simply this: being ruthlessly aware of an immature drive, desire, to be desired, to be affirmed. You call it love, and with the affection that I'm getting, it's a deceitful desire. That's not love. That's turning somebody into a drug. That's anxiety. How do I hide this? How do I maintain this? How do I nurture this? Is it right? Is it wrong? It's not love. You've got to know the difference between a thrill and happiness, between pleasures, even pleasures that last for years, and actual shalom, content, wholeness. Miles apart. You've got to be ruthlessly mature about that. You've got to become deeply aware that real love is something given. I just need love. Yes, give it. That's what's so hard. I just want to be loved. Right, go love. Don't exchange, well, if I push this button and then I get it. That's not love. That's business. You've got to be ruthlessly aware of this difference and understand that the heart that Christ is wanting to give us is an unaddicted, pure, good heart. Potiphar gave himself to food. Seemed to be all he wanted. His wife isn't named. Totally dehumanized because she dehumanized herself. She doesn't even get a name. How did Joseph do what he did? Yosef, the Lord will add. That's what it means in Hebrew. The Lord will give me what I need. The Lord will multiply. I get what I need from God. I get my identity, everything that's I need, I get that from God. Not religion, not a discussion about him, but from his spirit. That's where it comes from. And so I'm able to say no to all kinds of counterfeits. I'm able to keep all of those childish thoughts in the light and say, no. There's no life in that. There's a thrill in it. Boy, that'd feel great. But it's not true wholeness and happiness. Yosef was able to run away because the Lord will increase. I pray that we would be a people that recognize you will not commit adultery. It's not behavior management. It's yet another way into freedom.